they begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high.
Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show. We stood beside 065. Thank you very much for listening on this Friday morning. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106 if you would like to respond to anything we are discussing this morning. As I mentioned, and this, we're down to our last half hour here, but still in Washington, D.C., doing the broadcast today. Spent 3 days this week in our nation's capital, and we'll probably need a good, nice, long, hot shower upon my arrival back in Mobile tomorrow. But I'm so glad to get up here to do it, and there's a lot going on Capitol Hill. As I said, we're keeping our eye on that. But anyway, enough of that. Let's get to our next guest in his natural habitat, if you will, up in Montgomery. A special session looks like it's winding down, but State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, on the line with us. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great, and you are correct. I think I'm going to need a shower when I get out of here, too. But that's just Montgomery in general. We've done some pretty good work up here and just have finished passing the prison construction legislation, and it has gone back to the House for concurrence.
And you think you guys are done? Do you think they're going to send it back with any changes?
I sure hope not. Of course, we'll stick around to make sure that it really is done, but it is my expectation that they'll concur with the changes, and it'll go to the governor for signature.
How do you feel about the plan? I mean, obviously none of these plans are perfect, and if you had your way, then things would be different or whatever, but overall, what's your assessment?
Yeah, I think it's a good plan. You know, the legislature worked hard on this all summer after the end of the last regular session and the subsequent demise of the governor's lease plan, $3 billion lease plan. We've come back and come up with a phased approach that is conservative, fiscally conservative. That spends, less than half of what the lease plan would have cost. So this is about 1.25. Uses a lot of cash on hand. That's a good thing. And then uses some federal ARPA money, the American Rescue Plan money, to go ahead and put a down payment, if you will, on that. And then it is borrowing some money, but it's doing it at historically low bond rates, probably the lowest bond rates we'll see in my lifetime. So I'm very pleased with it, and I think it'll address a lot of the DOJ concerns and assist us with staffing issues and things like that. But it's a good first step to get this problem fixed, and it's a good sign of an effective legislature.
Do you still feel? I know Sean asked you about this, but I'm going to ask you for my sake. The ARPA money, the federal money, that it is being used in what is deemed by the legislation, the letter of the law, to be justifiable in this regard?
Without a doubt. I mean, the money is earmarked for lost revenue, right? It's to replace lost revenue that would have otherwise gone to the general fund, to be used for general fund purposes. And yes, this is a general fund purpose. I mean, I know there's some in D.C., that think it should be used in something else. But, when you send the state's money to replace lost revenue, they're going to use it where they see it's appropriate. Frankly, it's the feds driving this. I think it's kind of poetic to use the federal money to move it in the right direction and get this problem fixed. We're going to have to spend this money anyway. We may as well use the Fed money to do it and reduce the amount of debt that we incur to accomplish the whole goal.
Right, and that's what we had a gentleman on. We had Tracy Estes on earlier in the program. He said the same thing, that, well, if the federal government does come in and say, and this is kind of would be my worry if I were in the legislature. Luckily, I'm not, but if I were, that maybe we're counting our chickens before they hatch. That, is there any reason to believe the Biden administration is going to say, hey, yeah, go ahead, Alabama, you go ahead and you spend federal money on prisons, because and they may be violating the law. They told us we couldn't, but that's going to, it seems like it could gum up the works.
I guess that is a hypothetical concern. The problem is the money's here. I mean, we've already got it. They've given it to us based on calculations, of what the lost revenue was. It's just an appropriate use of the money. It may not have been something that they thought about when they were passing the statute in Washington, but it's what we've decided to spend the lost revenue money on. And again, I think it's a good deal for taxpayers, and it reduces the total amount of debt incurred. And that's a good conservative way to govern. So I honestly am not, I'm just not worried about it. There's going to be a lot of folks who like talking about it all for others, but we're solving a problem. We're solving it with an Alabama solution.
Well, let's talk about that, the solution. There's always been this concern about it that, is it going to be enough? Are there going to be enough prison beds there? Or at minimum, does this prison plan, if passed aside by the governor, does it at least allow for the possibility that if in the future you're going to need to build another facility, state's growing, you could have more incarcerated, that there's that opportunity?
It absolutely does, and it should. You know, if the state grows, if our incarcerated population grows, then yes, there's certainly the ability to replace additional facilities and to build new ones. This phase one that is approved and funded right now is to build you know, these two 4,000 bed facilities, and it's largely a bed replacement program. And I think that's an important thing to note. What we're doing here is we're taking these dormitory style facilities that we have now and moving them to actual jail cells, which will reduce violence in our prisons, not just violence on guards, but violence between inmates as well. A big thing for DOJ. It's one of their big concerns and one of the things they've been breathing down our neck about. And frankly, those prisoners deserve, you know, some degree of safety where they're not, you know, worried about sexual assault and murder and assault on a daily basis. So we put them in these jail cells, and we keep them locked up, keep them, you know, bad folks away from the public, and that's what we should do. But yes, there's, you know, phase two looks at the need for additional facilities and a study to properly look at after COVID settles things out, after we get more inmates out of county jails that they need to get out of county jails, what are the real needs of the Department of Corrections moving forward? And then there's another phase at that point to do additional work if needed. But it doesn't overbuild. It's just the sweet spot. It's right where it needs to be. And then, of course, we'll look at it again in phase two and a phase three when we need to and when it's necessary.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, now it's my understanding that you do have cash on hand to use, which means you can go ahead and start breaking ground on these if all goes well, that they're ready to go. State-owned land, get a bulldozer or whatever, but you're also ready to pull the trigger on Perry County just with the money that you have on hand. Is that still the case?
It is still the case, and I'm glad you point out Perry County. You and I have talked about that for a long time now, almost 3 years now. But that's an additional thing to point out is, you know, you got another 700-bed facility coming online. It'll help with some transitional work with pardon and paroles and others, but can also act as an overflow facility and things of that nature of existing facilities. When you start looking at what we're paying for Perry County per bed versus what we're, you know, having to replace or maintain right now, it is a knockdown, drag out deal for the taxpayers. And that's a good thing. And you're correct also to say with the cash on hand right now, you know, fund balances moving forward or unanticipated revenues that we have seen come in, we've got the cash to go ahead and start construction. And I think you'll see that very, very soon in both Escambia and Elmore County.
Now, do we know a price tag on the Perry County facility yet, or is that still going to be hammered out?
About $18 million for a 750-bed facility. And you start looking at that per bed cost versus or just the maintenance on some of our other facilities and what these new facilities are going to cost, that's an awfully good bargain. Now, in all fairness, style bedding again, or lodging again for these folks, but the intent there is to use it in a transitional manner or to use it for lower or minimum security folks or parole violators that are going to come back to the system for a month or two or a year and then probably end up on parole again. So it is admittedly a less in security facility, but beds are beds sometimes, and that's what we're going to use it for.
I mean, it's a much lower price tag than when the state tried to buy it in the past or flirted with buying it in the past. I think, you know, you heard numbers of like $60 million for that Perry County facility. So it sounds like you're getting it at a kind of a sweetheart deal.
it is, and I'm really pleased with that purchase and the insistence that be part of this. And I think a lot of this, the credit goes to former Senator Tam Ward, now pardon parole's director, who was instrumental in the future staffing of that to make sure that it worked, because DOC had always had some concerns. The Department of Corrections had always had some concerns about staffing that. And I think a combination effort there between pardon and paroles and DOC is how that facility is going to function, and it's going to work well.
Well, and, you know, consolidating some services there and putting them in that one location that should have been the approach all along, it seems. And it took somebody like a Senator Ward to do so.
It did. And again, I think this is something that should have happened a long time ago when we were in a prison overcrowding crisis and we were allowing an empty prison to sit there. It just doesn't make any sense. But that's spilled milk now. We've moved forward with it. We've got the bill passed in both chambers. Again, has to be concurred with downstairs, but that ought to put the bow on this special session, and that ought to put us in the right steps, the right track to making sure this is fixed.
What about these facilities, the Senator Billy Beasley's district, and then obviously the agent firmed up in Hamilton, shutting those down or whatever? Well, I guess with this amendment that would put a pause on Hamilton in particular, but looking at, because the language leaves open at least the facilities in Bullock and Barber County as one of three. When does that decision, how does that decision determine what is going to happen there?
You know, the legislation does call for closures of facilities as phase one gets moving, and there are just winners and losers sometimes when you make significant changes like that. And when we start consolidating these large prisons in areas of the state, there are smaller facilities that are very expensive to operate, that are very derelict, if you will, right now, and they're towards the end of their useful life. Now, unfortunately, a lot of these are in rural areas or near municipalities that have invested heavily in infrastructure and are going to have some financial hardship, admittedly. But it's not any different than a major, you know, employer, a mill, a plant, or something like that, you know, shutting down or moving. That's kind of the nature of things, and you can't fix all the problems. And unfortunately, those areas are going to feel this, and I hate that for them. And I understand Senator Beasley's, his consternation over that. He made a valiant effort to try to keep those facilities open, but at the end of the day, I think we've got, you know, a fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers to make sure we're using their money in the most efficient way possible, and that's what this bill does.
As far as the specifics, will that be determined, I assume, by the Department of Corrections at some point of how they want to proceed?
It will be. I mean, obviously, there are people in those facilities that will need to be moved into the new facilities, but I would expect that as soon as that happens, the need for those older facilities will not be there anymore. To the extent that they can be repurposed for some other state, you know, purpose, whatever that may be, then I could see them still being used in that manner, but they will no longer be used.
How much did the criminal justice components of the call really come into this week? I was kind of watching from afar and it didn't have my full attention, but it didn't seem to really impact the construction side of it. And I think you and I talked a lot about it actually last week and maybe drew the ire of one of your colleagues coming into the special session. But it seemed to make, I won't say flamed out. You got one of the two done, but it didn't seem to be quite as big of a deal.
No, and you know, that you're correct. One of those did pass here just a few minutes ago, and I voted no on it. I don't think it was not something that I think should have been in the call. But you know, that was one of those things that leadership seemed to have agreed to, and it did move forward with a wide margin in the Senate, and of course a wide margin in the House. I just I have concerns about, you know, some of the things contained and in that legislation. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad legislation. I wish we could have taken it up in a regular session and had more time to really focus on it. I think the special should have been more focused on construction of new facilities and not really letting folks out early. But there are some merits in that. I think are worthy. It just didn't have my support. Didn't have my vote today.
It was just the timing of it. It was peculiar for Governor Ivey to have included that in the call. And it, like you said, it was a potential hiccup, but it didn't seem to interfere with the process at all.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about it for sure. I know a lot of my colleagues were not thrilled about it either. But you know, look, sometimes it's about compromise up here, and that's what happened today. I and a number of my colleagues voted against the legislation, and I'm perfectly happy with my vote there. I'd rather had it come up in the regular session and embed it a little bit more. You know, we had a lot of law enforcement. I've heard from my sheriff, my district attorney. Of course, the attorney general came out opposed to the legislation. And I just I wish we'd had a little bit more time to take those concerns to heart for vote.
And finally, we'll get you out of here on this, on the DOJ side of this. There's still a concern out there, even if you get this signed by Governor Ivey today, that the DOJ still could come in and a federal court could rule and something still might happen in the interim?
You know, that's always a possibility, but I also think that the Department of Justice and the judge hearing the case is looking at this particular prison plan. And this plan was designed to check the boxes, by and large, of DOJ's concerns. And I think we are doing just that. So if you're the judge or you're the Department of Justice, you're looking at the action we've just taken and you've got to be saying, hey, they're really headed in the right direction. Immediately, we're going to see some progress. And then over time, things like staffing issues and things like that are going to get money in our facilities is going to get better. And people are going to be more inclined to work there as opposed to the conditions we have right now. The safety of the inmates and our corrections officers is going to improve dramatically. These are all Department of Justice concerns, and a lot of them will be solved by the construction program that's fixing to start.
Senator, you've been very kind. Tell some of your colleagues, I know them well, that I said hello, and we'll talk again next week.
I will do it. Travel safely back to the land of milk and honey.
I'm looking forward to it. You have no idea how bad D.C. is these days. But anyway, thanks for coming on.
You got it.
State Senator Chris Elliott there with us. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.